Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining Law Matters this morning. Our guest today is FBI Supervisory Special Agent in Charge, Mary Gleason. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
And we have also Public Affairs Officer Kevin Smith.
Good morning, Sherry.
How you doing?
I just couldn't be better on a fine Saturday morning. Appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
Oh, great. I was surprised when I told people what the topic today was going to be, how many people said, what's that? So we're going to be talking about sextortion. And can you give us a definition of sextortion?
Sure. In the simplest terms, sextortion is a criminal act which involves generally adults that, through social media, coerce minors into creating and sending sexually explicit images or video for a variety of reasons. They, either collect them, and then once they have them, they will extort the minor, either asking for more videos by threatening to do harm to their families or actually asking for money. And if they don't pay the money, they threaten to send the photos to their friends and family.
How does a teenager, a child, find themselves in a situation like this? Is it through gaming?
That's one way. And a lot of teens these days spend time on TikTok or Snapchat watching videos, and they click like, and the next thing you know, somebody who runs that application that they click the like on will reach out to them, and they start this conversation. And they think that they're having a conversation with somebody their own age, possibly the same gender, sometimes the different gender. And, they think it's a real relationship. And so, as it develops, because, sometimes it takes time, sometimes it's rather quick. It either happens on those, and sometimes they switch to other platforms. The gaming one is another easy one because there's a shared interest, because they're both playing that same video game. Usually there is a chat feature in the video game. A lot of kids use one called Discord, and they move off that social media to another platform where the images and videos can be sent.
You said they move to another platform. Does that mean they're invited to go to a different website, maybe? I don't know what that means.
Yeah, so it's another application, so a way to chat, such as Kick, Signal. There's like several that, if you have ever used Snapchat, and I didn't know this, my nieces and nephew taught me this one, that if you how you try to capture a photo because you like it, not a bad photo, but you, through your phone, you take a photograph of it. If you do that on Snapchat, the user is notified. So that's why they will move from a platform that has, notifications in it to one that doesn't, like a Kick.
Oh, so you can't trace who's requesting
these? Well, you don't know that they're taking the photograph. So you are at a point where you feel comfortable because of the conversation and the way the chat is going, and you send this photo. And what kids don't really realize is that, anything on the internet or sent in an application, even on your phone, it's out there forever, and there's always a risk.
I was told when I suggested, set the security platform so students or kids, young ones, can only go to certain places, and I was told that that could be overridden by probably a six-year-old. Is that true?
Well, unfortunately, I think the youth of today are a lot more technologically savvy than most of us adults. I have conversations with my nieces to kind of know, hey, what is the latest platform that kids are on? Because it changes, and it's really hard to stay up with technology. I do think it's extremely important that parents have parental control in their, internet services. So one of our agents, who actually investigates a lot of these cases, she has teenage children, and if they try to download an application on any of their devices, she gets notified, and she has to approve it. So why that's important is we actually had one case where a young girl was on Instagram, and her mom was adamant. She doesn't have an Instagram account. I check her phone every night when she gets home from school. Well, when we talked to the young woman, it turned out every day that she left for school, she downloaded the app, she had her conversations on Instagram, and then before she got home, she deleted the app. So just looking at the phone isn't really indicative of what's on that phone.
So how do parents, that's pretty sneaky, how do parents, how do you, if you're just looking at the phone, the app's got to be on there somewhere, right? I mean, correct. A history of the app, how do they find the history of what's been happening instead of just looking at the phone and seeing there's no app there?
Correct. And again, I'm not one of the cyber experts, but the way that, you know, we understand it is that if a parent goes into the history of their, you know, if it's all on a shared account, they can see what apps have been downloaded and when, or even like how much content might be in it. So the size of it. And a lot of parents, you know, they look at it set on their phones. I mean, we're all guilty of it, and they don't take the time to actually go into, you know, the internet provider services just to kind of see, you know, we all should do that at least, you know, every couple of months, just like safeguarding our passwords. We kind of have to go in and do some cleanup and just make sure there aren't new security things that they can put in place. You know, there's also parents that set a time limit so that at 10 p.m., you know, nobody can go on the internet. Well, there are kids smart enough that know how to turn that off so that they can still be on. So it's, was there any activity after 10 p.m.?
Ooh, wow. Yeah. And if you look at your bill, your provider's bill, doesn't that tell you when activity happened and like what phone numbers are being called?
It can, you know, unfortunately, you know, so many bills are electronic these days that, yeah. You know, I know I'm guilty of it, that I just pay them. I don't really look at the detail on them.
Yeah, me too, unfortunately. So when somebody is talked into or finds themselves kind of trapped into the situation where somebody's asking them for nude photos or threatening them they're going to do whatever if they don't get it, what are some of the situations you've heard of?
There are so many different scenarios, and, you know, each one of them, you know, breaks my heart because, you know, these kids think that they've done something wrong. They don't realize that, you know, the adult on the other end, you know, that they think is a kid, they're the ones who are doing something wrong. You know, I know that there are long-term ones. Generally, the tips that we have been receiving are I started this conversation, it's been, you know, a couple weeks, I sent a photo, and now they are threatening me. And, you know, the good news is that we are getting these complaints. You know, kids are telling an adult. But the problem is, I mean, those are the ones that are telling us. What about the kids that don't feel comfortable going to an adult and telling them, you know, because it's really embarrassing for a lot of them.
It's not only embarrassing, but, you know, you can kind of anticipate how is your parent going to react to this type of news. And if the parent gets excited and, you know, loud and not quite an understanding, you know, that's going to shut them down.
Exactly. And so one of the first things that I do when, you know, I reach out to them once we receive the complaint is, you know, I applaud the parent and say, you know, how lucky are you that you have a relationship with your, you know, son, daughter, that they felt comfortable enough to come to you.
Yes.
I've also spoken with aunts, you know, because there was one young man who, you know, was questioning his sexuality. His parents didn't know, but his aunt knew. And I said, he's, you know, lucky to have you in his life.
Exactly.
And, you know, just encourage the parents to be supportive. You know, there is a, you know, darker side on this too, where, you know, because the kids, they take the threat as real. And I'm not saying it's not real, but, you know, the reality is when they ask for the money, if you send it, they're still going to ask for more money.
Mm-hmm.
It's a scam. And whether or not they, I can't say they're never going to send the videos, because we know that they have sent videos and photos. But each of these criminals, if you will, you know, they're different. And some of them won't cross that line. They're never going to send it out. And that threat is so real that several of these youth have become suicidal. Mm-hmm. One dad told me that his son had called, you know, a suicide hotline twice. And, you know, what could he do? Wow. So we offer them victim services.
Through the, you have victim services through the FBI?
We do.
I did not know that.
Our offices have several victim specialists, and they participate in all of our investigations. Generally, we, you know, notify them every time we open a case that has a potential victim, and it's either, you know, a case like this, you know, or even, you know, a fraud case. Those are going to have victims, and so they are kept extremely busy. Local police departments have them as well, and we tend to work together on a lot of investigations, and so our victim specialists will work together as well.
Does a teenager, somebody who's underage, have to have their parents' permission to call the FBI?
They do not. The, you know, problem sometimes that we come into is like the age of the youth when we call them back. Generally, the youth that call are, I've seen the youngest about 14, where I think they understand and perhaps know what the FBI is. Other kids might not. They not only call the FBI, there's also, because I think schools are putting it out there, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children.
Right.
They can call there, and they have counselors that will talk with kids 24 hours a day.
Oh, wow. That's something. I didn't know that either. So... Mm-hmm. If a young person, and I have to tell you this, we did a presentation a few months back on sex trafficking, and one of the kids that was interviewed, the question was, what is going on that your parents and your teachers don't know? And her response was, her friend's boyfriend told her that if she didn't send a naked picture of her to him, he was going to post a naked picture of the girlfriend online, and you know, if you want to stop that, you'll send me a picture of you naked.
So I guess one of my first questions would be, is this a boyfriend that she's actually met in person? Because, you know, another, and again, I haven't necessarily seen it directly here in Arizona, but I have heard of cases where they don't just extort the, you know, individual that they're talking to. They get that person to get their friends involved and take sexually explicit photos with friends, with animals. I mean, it can get pretty dark. And so we have seen that. But, you know, I think it goes back to what I said earlier, that, you know, kids need to understand that even when you are in a real relationship, sharing those photos, once it's out there forever. And if that relationship sours, you never know what that person is going to do with those photos.
Oh, absolutely. Down the road, you know, you're applying for a job and they're doing some research on you and they find this. That's not a good thing. Or you're going into the military. That's not a good thing. So other than what happens if you find the person who's exploiting these kids, what happens to them when they get arrested? Do they... What happens in the process of the judicial system?
So the good news is that because of the explicit material, the sentences they receive are significant. Years. I was recently looking at some of those statistics, and, you know, if they're caught, I mean, that's the biggest thing. Sometimes it's very hard for us to find them because they are so technologically savvy, or they're in another country and we don't necessarily have access. But that, you know, there was one out of Florida that I think it was 16 years. I do believe, and I don't know, Kevin, correct me if I'm wrong, I think they also get put on the sex offender registry.
Yeah.
And they have to register as sex offenders.
Yeah, and then they usually have, it's a lifetime of probation. So it's not as if, you know, they do their time and they get out. And at the FBI, if we work these cases, we also do our best to notify the victims. So my squad will receive leads from other offices, and it's hard because sometimes, you know, the crime might have occurred 2 years ago when they were 16. They're now 18, and an agent is coming out to talk to them, and they don't want to talk at their house because their parents are there, and they never told their parents, and they don't want to talk about it. They're fine. You know, we offer them the services, but it's just, again, so sad that, you know, this is the first time we're reaching out to them because of a subject that has been arrested, and they never came forward. And, you know, I just hope that they got the help they needed in that, you know, 1 year, 2 years, whatever it is, before we knocked on their door.
That's a heavy burden to be walking around with, knowing that something like this happened and you don't know when it's going to rear its ugly head in the future. So,
yes.
Yeah, that's... How long have you been working in this particular field with sextortion and sex crimes?
Actually, I'm fairly new to it. So I've only been doing it for the past couple of years since I moved out to Arizona.
So how long have you been with the FBI?
I think I am coming up on my 16-year anniversary at the end of the month.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Is Paisley still up there?
Paisley is still up there.
Love that dog.
Yeah, for those listeners that don't know, Paisley is our victim services dog, and she comes out with us on search warrants to, you know, accept pets and donuts from the search teams when they need it.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's great to have a dog like that who's just so chill. This dog is just so kicked back. So what do parents...
Yes, you're very lucky.
Yeah. So what do parents do if they find out that their child has got an issue like this and they might just only know a fraction of what's going on? What do they do to help their child? And how do they report it to local, or do they call the FBI?
So I think it's important that, you know, even if they don't know about it yet, parents need to start having conversations with their kids. Once they find it, the child may or may not feel comfortable telling exactly what it is. So, yes, the local police as well as the FBI are handling these issues. A local police department called me actually last night because they have this case and they don't deal with these very often. And so they were asking me, you know, how do we handle it? What can we say? What can we do? And at the end of it, he said, can you just call them back? And, you know, my agent told me, you're too nice. You're calling them back. But this is such an important issue that, you know, we all have to help each other out. You know, when I talk to the parents, I also offer to have any of my agents come out and give presentations to, you know, freshman orientations or, you know, middle school classes on, it's not just sextortion, it's cybersecurity and how to protect themselves online. And, you know, unfortunately, not as many schools take us up on this opportunity. I don't know if it's the topic that kind of turns them off, but we don't, you know, it's not all about sex, or photos, but, you know, again, the cybersecurity piece is what we lean on. And, you know, that's why we're, you know, kind of focusing on getting the message out this next week, because it is so important. And maybe, excuse me, they'll start asking us to come out and do some of these presentations.
Yeah, you want to be proactive when it's a situation like this. People say, oh, my child would never do that. Well, surprise. You know, your child's probably doing that and you don't know about it. And how do you, if you've got a parent who says, oh, my child would never do that. And I've had people say that, you know, my kids live at home, they couldn't be sex trafficked, or my son doesn't use drugs, he just sells them. Like, that makes it better.
Right.
How do you convince parents that they need to be proactive, whether they believe their child's doing it or not, for the future, because it's happening?
I think that, you know, any of us can fall victim. I mean, look at how many of the elderly fall for these, you know, financial scams. It's the same concept. Mm-hmm. You know, the criminals are predators that, you know, prey on our vulnerabilities. And, you know, we're all going to react differently. There was one instance where these young boys were chatting with somebody on Discord, and the gentleman, and they thought it was a kid, but, you know, then all of a sudden the way the conversation was, they're like, this has to be an adult. And they went and told a mom. And she was actually able to figure out where he was. You know, he wasn't very savvy. Through social media, she found him on Facebook, and he was actually overseas. She called the local authorities there, and he was arrested.
Good for her.
And, you know, well, yeah, and great for those kids, because they, you know, they recognized it, that, you know, this isn't right. So, you know, that's a parent who probably was having that conversation, but look at how quickly it happened. I mean, they were just chatting on a video game.
A lot of kids feel like because they're talking to people online and they might be talking to them for a few weeks or months, that they know that person. That's not a stranger. That's somebody that I have a relationship with, and it's okay. How do you get across to them that, no, it's not okay, you really don't know that person? What conversation do you have with them, and they're arguing with you that, no, I do know
them? Yeah, so that gets difficult, because, you know, you can go back to the old, you know, stranger danger, but, you know, 2 months of chatting, they're not necessarily a stranger, but you've never met them. So it's, you know, kind of a gray area, and parents have a hard time talking to the kids about it because the parents themselves have never experienced this. You know, not to date myself, but email came out while I was in college. And, you know, I remember we would go to the computer lab and we'd all be there at the same time emailing each other. So there was no instant messaging or texting. So it's, you know, hard to completely understand how kids are using that social media.
Yeah, they're very creative too. Very creative. And it's hard to understand what you don't know. And, you know, myself, if I'm so glad my child is grown, because I wouldn't want to be dealing with this. It's hard to understand what you don't know. And I keep telling people, you need to listen to the show, because you don't know what you don't know until you listen to the show. And what really makes this sextortion FBI territory?
So, honestly, it's the production of, we call them child sexual abuse material. They got away from child pornography, and, you know, the children should not, again, feel like they did anything wrong, because they've been coerced or enticed by the individual on the other end to create and send these images. And so, federally, what we investigate is the production and distribution of CSAM, the child sexual abuse material. And so that's why we get involved. We also get involved because the victims are throughout the country. And so, you know, our offices do a great job of, you know, working together, sending leads if we identify victims. There are often instances where the images get shared on other platforms, and we try to identify those through the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. That's our, I'm going to use the word clearinghouse for a better word, that these photos are assigned I'm not a real cyber person, but it's a hash value. And so it's known, and if we identify the victim, you know, we can identify the series of photos that are attributed to them. And so I think NCMEC's goal is to try and get some of those photos removed from the internet. Unfortunately, it's also done on the dark web, but, you know, so that's why we're involved, because of the, you know, cross-state, the production piece of it and the distribution piece.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break right now. We'll be back in a few. Stay with us. Thank you for staying with us. Our guests today are FBI Supervisory Special Agent in Charge, Mary Gleason, and Public Affairs Officer, Kevin Smith. We haven't heard from Kevin too much, but we will in a little while. We've got special questions for him. So how does the situation like this develop? If somebody is like this young lady who said her friend's boyfriend, who apparently... she knew him. She saw him. He was physically there. It wasn't somebody online.
Okay.
So this is happening in a school. Kids are threatening and bullying each other to produce naked photos of themselves. Everybody's doing it. It's no big thing. What do you say to these people? And can they be arrested? Can the boyfriend be arrested?
So that's a tougher situation for law enforcement throughout the country, because, you know, the way a prosecutor looks at the case is, you know, the consent piece and the ages. You know, if it's a, you know, 16-year-old boy and 12-year-old girls, like, they kind of, sometimes they do more than 2 years, like a gap. Yes, they are going to possibly charge that individual. But, you know, when they're both 16, it makes it extremely difficult for law enforcement. And my task force sergeant, he, you know, said that he'll go out to the houses, and it really is an educational discussion that he has with the kids. Again, that once an image is out there, even if it's somebody you know, it's out there forever. Because, you know, it's, again, because it's consensual and they're sending it to each other, it's definitely something difficult for a prosecutor to work with. So it's, for charges to be brought, it's not as easy. Now, the bullying, you know, with the friend, you know, obviously every situation is different. So we'd have to know the details. And if she had a picture of her friend, how did she get it? Did she ask for it? A friend sent it. But it's really not the greatest situation for law enforcement.
No, because it's hard to prosecute that situation, and the damage is already done. So, you know, you're living with something that you didn't really intend. What if photos are taken of somebody and they don't know they're being photographed, and then they're being put online? Is that sextortion?
Well, that is production. The sextortion piece comes in when they ask for money or threaten them to not release the photos elsewhere. So once the photos are put out on the internet, that is, you know, production, and so those individuals could be charged.
Is that a more violent crime or a worse crime?
Yes, the sentences for those are more significant. And actually, here in the state of Arizona, the sentencing at the state level, it sometimes is higher than the federal level. So if we come across a case where, you know, they've only produced one or two images, we, the FBI, will do the workup, but then we'll pass it to our state partners to actually charge it, because we want those more significant sentences.
Okay.
And then we will focus on the more egregious cases.
So federal law is federal law mirrored in state law? When you said you give it to your local partners, are they going to get the same type of a sentence locally as they would federally?
Well, here in Arizona, they get more significant, they get more time at the state level.
Because they just passed a law that just went into effect. Or did it? Is it, do they wait until when?
I'm not sure of a recent law. Again, I've only been here for a couple of years, but it's been since I've been here.
Okay.
And
Yeah, I think Arizona is like in the forefront of going after people like this as far as our law is concerned.
When I talk to headquarters, they because we all have to report back our statistics to our headquarters in Washington, D.C., and they are always floored at some of the state sentences that we get here in Arizona. But that's not necessarily, you know, true for other states.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I think every state should follow our lead and, you know, crack down on these people, these perverts. So, yeah. Do you think this is an underreported crime?
Yes, I definitely do. And I don't know how we could capture those statistics. I was, you know, reading somewhere that, you know, several years ago, the FBI had 5,000 sextortion tips, and a couple of years ago it was 18,000. So it's definitely on the rise, but it, you know, those are only the ones that are reported. You know, I'm sure that there are, you know, definitely double and probably even more. You know, and something that, you know, I don't know the statistics on, but the majority of complaints we see are from young men, but I know that it's happening to young women. And so,
Young men are
reporting it.
Wow. Okay.
Versus, you know, the young women. And so, why aren't, I mean, I don't think it's happening. I mean, it could be happening to young men more than young women. I think it's happening to both. But, you know, the reporting is more from young men that I've seen.
Wow. That, I would not have guessed that. I would have thought that females would be more like exploited than young men, but
they probably are, but they're not telling an adult.
Yeah. Is the situation
that you asked earlier, you know, about, you know, what can parents do? I mean, it is a real concern that, you know, kids are out of school for the summer, which means that a lot of these teenagers are home and they're unsupervised for, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day. And, you know, that's why, again, it's important to have these conversations, because what are they doing, you know, with that time?
Yeah. And this can happen while you're playing a game, you're online, you know, doing whatever online, and you think you're talking to another kid and it turns out to be, you know, some 30-year-old living in his mother's basement.
You know, and kids should also make sure they have, you know, strong passwords. They should cover web cameras. You know, if it does.
Hello? I think we lost her. Kevin, are you there? Nobody's there. See, this is what happens on live radio. Can you call him back? You don't have a number. Okay, well, when they figure out that they've been disconnected somehow, you know, we will actually have them call back. If you have any questions for our guests, the number is 520-790-2040. And if you've been a victim of this, call in and tell us what's going on with your life and how you managed to solve the situation, because this is serious. It sounds like it's a little thing, but it isn't. It's a serious issue, and we need to take care of it. So, do we have people back?
Sorry about that.
Is it random people or is this Mary?
This is Mary and Kevin.
How you doing?
We love our technology. These phones have been great.
We thought you got tired of us and hung up on us.
Yeah, you know, them again. Click. No, we were talking about what parents can do to, you know, protect their kids. So, you know, what can they do? I mean, how extensive can they get in this process of trying to keep their kids safe? turn off the computers.
Yeah.
Don't give them a phone.
Media. I did see one mother who paid the child, and I don't remember if it was a boy or a girl, $1,800 if they stayed off all social media until they were 18 years old. You know, not everybody can afford that, but, you know, the concept was good. I know a lot of agents in our office, they say, I'm never giving my kid a cell phone. But again, that's not realistic. You know, cell phones are also, you know, a safety tool for us. And, you know, it's an important for everybody to, you know, have access, but maybe not unlimited access. And
yeah, you know what? That's not making them streetwise, because you want your kids not to be educated in school. You want them to be streetwise. And if they're not dealing with the everyday occurrences and knowing how to handle that until they're 18, all of a sudden there's a phone and you find out, you know, they've got issues now.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I think, too, it's very important that if to drill into our kids, you know, think before you send something. I think, you know, a good tip that I have heard others use is, you know, if you've never met the person in person who you're communicating with, don't send anything. Don't send pictures. Don't send money, because inevitably it's a scam.
Yeah.
And it's just not healthy to believe you have a healthy relationship just online. There's no such thing. And I always get eyes on the person you're talking to. And if they start making excuses about why they can't meet, or something came up, or I'm stuck in a foreign country, you need to send me a picture to help me get through my angst. You know, that's just, you got to really drill into your kids. If you don't know the person you're sending a picture to, just don't send it. If it's not your best friend down the street or someone like that, it's probably not a good thing to do. I don't think that's a tough message to get across. It's what's tough is in this age that we are in, with instant information and instant messaging and instant gratification, kids don't often think before they just fire off a picture, not knowing the consequences of that down the road. So if we can talk to kids and adults about, just don't send anything to somebody you haven't seen in person.
That's, and don't send pictures of yourself to people you do know. Not, you know, that...
Correct.
Naked pictures. No, I'm sorry. That doesn't work.
And one of the problems, too, is, you know, even if they say, oh, well, I sent it, but I didn't put my photo in it. Well, you have photos of your face, you know, on other sites. The person can manipulate that photo to put your, you know, head on your body, and, you know, then it's out there.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, another problem that we are dealing with. And, you know, the extortion piece of that is that sometimes they will, you know, manipulate the photos into flyers with just the face, saying, you know, if you see this person, you know, they're wanted for, you know, some horrendous crime, and, you know, they, you know, kill puppies, whatever they do. And it's just, it's, you know, again, it's any site, and this could happen even if it's, you know, not someone you know. So it's just a hard time for us, I guess, in society, and you just never know when you're going to become the next victim.
Yeah, you don't know what people are going to do with your pictures. And I really don't like having my picture taken and putting it online. So, you know, I just because I'm not photogenic, but...
No, I hate seeing when my friends post pictures of their kids.
And like, I'm on vacation. I love that one. I'm on vacation.
Yeah.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
And your address is what?
Exactly.
So,
and that's, you know, Kevin kind of touched on it a little bit, you know, not even, you know, if you need to meet them, well, you know, that kind of crosses a line into, you know, other things my squad investigates. And, you know, parents should look maybe at the kid's browser history. If they're looking up how much is a bus ticket to a different state, you know, we had the young woman in, you know, Sierra Vista, you know, who was abducted last month or 2 months ago. And, you know, I'm not saying that it was in the, you know, history, but she had to get, you know, to North Carolina somehow. And that's where it's, if, you know, parents are paying attention, and it's, you know, it is, I guess, a job to be a parent. You know, I don't have kids, but I have nieces and nephews, and you have to be vigilant and looking at the browser history. What are they looking up? And maybe not just the tickets, what about the content? Because some of these predators will say, I want you to do this, and it's a word the kid might not know. So then they're looking up that word and what it is, and then they are getting content that might be explicit. So if parents look at search histories, they will be enlightened.
And what is that dictionary, the Urban Dictionary? Is that what it's called?
Yes.
If you don't know what something means, your child's using some kind of a phrase or acronym with their friends, look it up in the Urban Dictionary and you'll find out. You'll be surprised. You'll find out what they're talking about. And it's important to try to stay on top of it. Like I said, I'm glad I'm not a parent today. It would be so rough.
Yeah.
And Kevin, do you have kids?
Yes, I do. I got luckily all young adults now. So I'm in your boat.
So you're safe.
Well, who knows? You know, it's probably, but yeah, it's, and I remember, you know, I don't want to date myself like, you know, McMary mentioned, but, you know, in the early days when my kids were in middle school and junior high and high school, that's just kind of when cell phones were proliferating.
Yeah.
And all of us were experimenting with how do we set the rules for how we use our phones. You know, one rule I had was if I call you, you have to answer it no matter what you're doing or where you are. That's kind of the price of freedom when you're having your cell phone. So if you're, my oldest son was 16, had his driver's license. So I call at like 7:30 and where are you? Oh, I'm at Matt's house and we're playing video games. Said, okay, that's cool. But that was like one rule of us, and you know, but it has progressed and changed even since then, where now you don't, I mean, calling, how many people call each other anymore even?
Everyone's they text.
Texting or instant message or something like that. So even the initial purpose of a cell phone is not used as much as the alternate uses are now. That's, I mean, they call them smartphones, but you know, I don't know if that's the right term or not.
You want to put the location.
One of my sergeants told me that, you know, this problem, it's not a new problem. It's a problem that's been complicated by technology. Mm-hmm. And the way he described it is that, you know, in his day, and I think he is older than me, he said, you know, kids, you know, young teens would get curious, and it's the, you know, you show me yours and I'll show you mine. And it's just, it's the same concept, but again, because of technology, it's always out there.
Yeah. But when you were playing, you show me yours, I'll show you mine, they didn't have cameras.
No.
It wasn't photographed and put online forever and ever. Shouldn't all parents put their, there's a location thing on their telephones? Shouldn't all parents make sure that location thing is activated on their kids' phones so they can follow them? And if
hopefully
something,
the kids are not able to turn it off.
Right. Because we have a, like, on a, speaking of technology, we have in our neighborhood a young lady just turned 16 who's got a driver's license, and on her phone, there's an actual app that when she gets in the car and turns the ignition on, the phone basically renders itself inactive.
That's smart.
And then it goes back on, of course, when she leaves the car. Now, could she override that? Probably. But she knows at this point that the ramifications of not doing that mean she doesn't get to drive the car. And so, you know, it's all sorts of trust that we have to have, this, you know, understandings that we have to have. And I think on the back on the sextortion thing, the point I really want to make is these kids are victims. And they think they've done something wrong. And that's part of the reason they don't report, is because they think they did something wrong. But I think Mary will attest to this too, that they're the victim, and the perpetrator is the person who got them to send a picture. And so that's one of the points we really want to get across, is they need to understand that they're not the ones in trouble, that we're going after the person who made them do that, and that they need to work through that embarrassment, which we understand. They need to work through with the family and perhaps, you know, Mary Squad and victim specialists about how parents and kids can work together. And one of the things we really ask to do is don't start deleting a bunch of stuff because you think you're going to get in trouble. Because the stuff that you might be deleting is exactly the stuff that we need to
evidence
further an investigation. And right, that's an important note here, is that, you know, if when we come to this point, keep the stuff. Don't worry about it. We're not going to judge you. We need that for investigative methods to going after these folks. So that's kind of another tip we want to get out there, is if this happens, keep the content, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, because people don't realize that if you're their victim, he's probably got a dozen or more victims elsewhere who have done the same thing.
Oh, and we had a case just in Minnesota, Sherry, that I just ran across from the U.S. Attorney's Office up there, is they just sentenced a guy to many, many years in prison who had over 500 victims.
Oh, my God. Busy person.
So, I mean, Mary, would you agree that, you know, if some of these perpetrators, they have hundreds of victims, right?
Yeah. And they, you know, some of them keep very good records of the exchanges. So when we actually, you know, execute that search warrant on the house, you know, and again, some of these victims haven't come forward, but we are able to try and figure out who they are, and we will do our best to reach out to them and offer services if they want to speak with somebody.
Explain to our listeners what the grooming process means, because I think people don't realize how easily this is done.
So the grooming aspect, you know, not only applies here in sextortion cases, but, you know, obviously I see it in human trafficking cases, several other violations that we work. But, you know, they start out very, you know, innocent, like with a shared interest. So if they're meeting on a gaming system, they are talking about that game. And then the conversation moves to a different platform, and the, you know, subject will start, you know, kind of testing the waters and start saying other things, or the young man or woman will send a photo and they'll say, oh, you know, you're really attractive. Have you ever thought of this? I think the color blue might look good on you. And so the next time they send a photo, you know, they're wearing a blue shirt, you know, and it progresses sometimes more quickly. But, you know, again, they will also sometimes say to them, oh, have you ever thought about doing this? And again, the child will look it up because they might not know what this is. And then it's, depending on the age of the child, this seems exciting. It's forbidden. You know, mom and dad haven't told me about that. And, you know, it kind of happens before you know it, that all of a sudden, you know, here's this person on the other end. They think it's also a teenager. They're the same age. And, you know, we're in a relationship. And then even if they figure out it's an adult, you know, the grooming has, you know, happened and kind of taken root. And they feel, sometimes they feel comfortable in that relationship. But at some point, it usually crosses a line. And then they feel threatened in that relationship. And that's when it gets uncomfortable. And generally, that's when, hopefully, they go to an adult.
To somebody, yeah. And a teacher, somebody, if you're afraid to talk to your parents. And the phone number for the FBI is 1-800-CALL-FBI. It couldn't be any more simple. And if you want to be an FBI agent, what do you have to go through, Kevin?
You got to go through hell. No, I'm just
kidding. Yeah, I know.
The pepper spray is the worst part. Everything.
Yeah, well, this. Yeah, I think. Yeah, Mary can answer that better because she actually been through Quantico and done the whole thing. And I will say that it's an intensive training. It's intensive to get into the FBI with the amount of interviews you have to do and certain psychological tests you have to take. And, you know, I'll let Mary answer that. I mean, I ask all the agents, because I'm fascinated by this. I'm like, when did you decide you wanted to be an FBI agent? And you get a million different answers of why people did it. So, Mary, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Yeah.
Why did you want to become an FBI agent?
It's, you know, it's funny. I blame my friend Brooke. We went to Notre Dame together, and it was her lifelong dream to become an FBI agent. And so, you know, we graduated in the 90s, and there was a hiring freeze on. So, you know, I guess I like to tell people I got on with my life. And then fast forward to 2005, and I was actually being interviewed because I worked at a bank. One of my tellers had applied to the FBI, so I was being interviewed for his background. And I went home that night and applied using my dial-up modem and found myself at Quantico a year later. And when I talk to people who are interested in becoming FBI agents, you know, they're always asking, what should I study? What should I do? And I tell them, you know, study what you know and what you enjoy.
Yes.
Because the FBI hires people from every background. You know, there's history teachers, police officers, military personnel, scientists,
PAO,
you know, engineers. I've worked with an agent was a lifetime agent. Come to find out that before he got in the FBI, he worked for the Chrysler Corporation as an engineer and was on the design team for the Dodge Challenger.
Oh, wow.
I do phase two interviews. So there is a process to get in. You know, the first is called phase one. It's a test. Then there is a fitness test that you have to pass. And then phase two is the interview. And one of the best phase two interviews I did, it was a gentleman who actually worked for David's Bridal. And you're thinking, how can somebody, you know, who works for David's Bridal, like
30
know, what
seconds
makes him competitive? But, you know, his answers just blew us away.
Well, I appreciate both of you coming on the show and shedding a light on this sextortion thing. And I hope we helped our listeners understand what it is, where it's happening, and help them take care of their kids, take care of your neighbors. And until next week, shop local, stay safe. Thanks again for coming
on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.